Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Recession alert! The velocity of money is going to be discussed today. Stocks, economy, and politics. Also, we have some great guests. We have Richard Yamarone from Bloomberg, the senior economist, and Kevin Hoffman from Horowitz & Company. We're going to be talking about all things related to the stock market, the economy, and money. So we got lots in store for you today on episode number 270 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And it is the summertime, so it's kind of a vacation time. I'm going to take a few days off. Actually going to Asia. If anybody heard the discussion on DH Unplugged, I'll be heading over to Cambodia and Singapore and Bali, Indonesia. And actually probably should do this over a month or a month and a half, but we're going to squeeze it into about, 12 days or so, because we want to make sure that we are here back for the kids and all that good stuff and plenty of time, hopefully in the future, to spend some more time. But I like to hop, skip, and a jump around the various countries. And I'm really into all the different food. The hawker stands in Singapore is going to be really cool. And I'm looking forward to staying at some unbelievable places in the jungles of Bali. And, of course, in Cambodia, Angkor Wat. If you haven't checked out some of the things that have gone on in Cambodia in terms of, obviously, the Khmer Rouge and the genocide that went on, but also the amazing discovery of this temple called Angkor Wat. It's, a wonder of the world. I would just look it up on Google and check it out. It's really a beautiful thing. I'll try to post some pictures here and there. Of course, I'll be working. The good thing is that you're always connected so that I'm actually flipped on time zones and I'll be 12 hours to the positive. And the good news is that we have it all set up here to kind of do things and communicate. And I love that. And we do things like have an opportunity, I'll just mention it right now, of sharing screens here with staff. And we'll talk through GoToMeeting, which is a great service. And I encourage you to check it out, because with GoToMeeting, who is a sponsor of this show, of course, GoToMeeting gives you the opportunity to share your screen, have meetings. We do our trigger point alerts and trigger point classes on GoToMeeting. If you haven't had the opportunity to do that, you should register. And what's nice about GoToMeeting is it's really easy to use. It's not one of these really hard programs. You can share a screen or pictures or pass the baton over, so to speak, or pass the microphone, have a lot of people talking at once, or maybe just you. And you can get 30 days of free GoToMeeting over at GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST and you'll get a free 30 days, kind of unlimited use of GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar and all that good stuff. We do have two guests today, so usually when we do that, we don't spend a lot of time talking about a lot of things that are going on. But needless to say, we are mired in a period of uncertainty. Clearly, the European situation doesn't seem to be coming to any kind of a head anytime soon. And beyond that, we also have the fiscal cliff, the problem of whether or not they're going to renew or extend or not, the various tax cuts that were put in place under the Bush administration. And that's going to be something that we have to look at. One of the things that we've been looking at, and I'm probably going to ask Richard about this, is the whole idea of the velocity of money. Why is it that there's so much stimulus going on in the United States, between low interest rates and between the Operation Twist and QE and all that, but yet it still is not having a great effect on the overall economy? When you look at a GDP print under 2 or right at 2, you can't say that that's really a great situation to have when you have so much stimulus being pumped into the economy. When we look back at the past times that the same kind of condition was put in, when you had low interest rates, there was back in the 80s, there was a lot of quick move to the economy. But when you look at what happened, for example, in Japan back in the 80s, when they kind of pumped money in and they continued to do it since, you didn't see the velocity of money. This is the amount of money that's kind of moving back and forth throughout the economy, changing hands. So what's the difference? That's a big issue. What's the difference? And it has to do with primarily a lack of confidence, but also the difference between a recessionary time and a slowdown that just needs a spark to get it going again, and then a slowdown that's a structural problem where you have a much bigger situation going on and you have, for example, bank failures, et cetera. And that requires the money to be plugging holes. But on top of that, it also requires the ability of or lack of confidence because you have a high unemployment rate, et cetera. So a structural problem prevents the velocity of money from really picking up steam. And if you look at some charts, and we'll have some of those going out to clients and in our quarterly news update that we do on economies, you know, it is a very troubling circumstance right now. And I think that's what's holding back a lot of the potential job growth, et cetera. We have a lot on the table in terms of Fed speak and discussion about the economy. We have next week, not this week, but next week, we have the NFP payrolls report coming out. And there is a discussion about, you know, what's that going to be? 8.3, 8.4 on the unemployment rate. We'll have to take a look at that. ECRI is still holding their position that there is going to be a recession. And I know that from the work that I've done and read about with Richard Yamarone from Bloomberg, he's going to probably talk about some of the same things and some of the negative attributes of the markets and of the economies. Now, mind you, stocks right now are holding up. They're being very technical in terms of indices. Yeah, there's some things falling off. There's some things picking up. It's kind of a very strange situation. It drops. It comes up. Right now, there's a lot of basically technical levels that are being held. We have to look at 1295 in the S&P as a drop-down zone. And from there, maybe you kind of move a little bit lower. 1335, 1350, maybe the top end of this. You know, unless something substantial happens that changes the dynamic of the world situation. So that's what we're kind of looking for. Because if we can get that, maybe confidence will change. We looked at the German situation. Germany's manufacturing is really dropping dramatically. Their confidence on both a business and individual basis is dropping dramatically. And they were the ones that were going to really just be the savior for Europe. When Angela Merkel, the prime minister of Germany, came out and said on, I think it was Tuesday, that there will not be euro bonds or joint euro bonds issued in my lifetime. That's pretty pronounced. I mean, that's not maybe, that's not, I'll think about it. That's pretty serious. So this is the kind of thing that we're looking at right now in Europe. We have Germany who does not want to be dragged down with the situation, which really doesn't have a choice because they're right, they're mired in it. Yet at the same time, they don't want to pay for all the bad behavior of the countries that really didn't do their job and hold their end of the bargain. Now, when I talked a number of months ago with my good friend John Markman, we talked about pricing of stocks. Where is the pricing of stocks right? Well, there's a delineation of whether you're in a quote-unquote recessionary period going backward or not. If you just, as you hear all the time, muddling along and just, you know, kind of having slow growth, well, that's one thing. Stocks can outperform. Really, there's a risk-on, risk-off situation, but yet, at the same time, you know that there's not many places to go to find good returns, so you may have to actually pick up equities and dividend-paying stocks, and you can't be in treasuries, can't be in CDs. But if we're in a recession, stocks get priced much differently. It's just natural. And you see usually a 10 to 15 to 20% drop in indices over that time period. Are we there? I don't know, but I'll tell you something right now. From what I can see on every indication of manufacturing, inventories, unemployment, the lack of the ability of the government to do anything, stimulus efforts failing, China slowing down dramatically, Europe being there just a disaster, inflation in India being off the charts, and really many of the emerging markets kind of just hanging in there right now, there's a big question mark. So I would encourage you to really rethink and not be complacent when it comes to your portfolio or, you know, any individual positions you own. So with that, let's get to our first guest. And as I promised, we have the senior economist from Bloomberg. His name is Richard Yamarone. He writes some great things, puts out an economist notepad every day, writes for Bloomberg Brief, and is a wealth of information. Richard, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, we got so much to talk about. I wanted to talk about some of the things that are really kind of percolating in the news that I know you have a lot to talk about with it, with regard to some of the things. You put out a piece last week, I think, when you looked at the FedEx indicator, I would call it, whereas FedEx You track the shipping and the package shipping and parcels, and you compare that to GDP. Tell me kind of about that a little bit.
Yeah, but basically what I do is I take the package shipments that come from FedEx. I also look at the UPS numbers, but they were out a little earlier in the previous month. And I track them, and they parallel GDP growth, real GDP growth on a year-over-year basis. And basically what the current estimate is that we're headed toward a little cliff, if you will, to paraphrase the fiscal cliff that seems to be running around the headlines of all over the business press. But yeah, it looks like the economy is headed for recession. It's unavoidable. I'm not going to make the big mistake of predicting, giving a date with that, because that's rule one in the prediction game. But I definitely see the recession in the tea leaves, and let's just leave it at that.
It seems pretty obvious that there is the potential for a recession when you look at a lot of the numbers kind of slipping down, although housing numbers look a little bit better these days. But and, you know, ECRI has come out with their prediction, which, you know, they seem to backtrack a little bit on the dates. In terms of a recession, is it really based on only what everybody's talking about? It's about Europe, but is there a bigger situation going on?
No, in fact, I don't even look at the European situation impacting U.S. Activity. I'm looking at the primary number I look at is real disposable personal incomes, that is, incomes that are available to U.S. U.S. workers once adjusted for the taxes and for the inflation rate. And we're basically barely above zero, about maybe 0.2%, 0.3% on a year-over-year basis. So basically, we're running out of money. Investors just don't have enough money to continue spending and foster or engender economic activity. And sooner or later, it's like a tank running out of gas. You will wind up on the side of the road, and I suspect that that's exactly where we're headed. Again, because of the consumer just running out of the wherewithal to spend and foster economic growth, and subsequently boost employment, which comes down the road. And there is nothing, certainly nothing I'm seeing in the Bloomberg Orange Book, which is a creation of mine, very similar to the Fed's Beige Book, that telling us that the economy is getting back on its feet.
Right. Yeah. The Orange Book, by the way, is a really great compendium of, I guess, the highlights of corporate calls, conference calls after earnings, outlooks, et cetera. And you can definitely see that there is much more concern of in the last, you know, 3 months, clearly after the first quarter, where everybody thought it was, you know, a lot better. But when we now tie this into when you tie this into the consumer, one of the things you've seen is consumer stocks generally have been doing very well. Now, you put out something that I really love. It's called the Fab Five, which we're going to be actually writing about in our quarterly. We put a little twist on it. There's five areas that you look at in terms of consumer spending that you find to be very indicative of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
So you have
the Fab. Yeah, my Fab Five are basically five indicators of consumer discretionary spending, and they're predominantly oriented around a woman's purchasing power, right? And a woman's purchases, period. Primarily because a woman tends to be the CFO of a household, right? She makes the decisions on how, traditionally, she drives the kids to school, so she knows how much gasoline costs. She puts food on the table, so she knows how much food costs, and she's usually responsible for everything from junior's ballet class piano lessons, Boy Scouts, and Cub Scouts, and everything. So when she sees things getting tougher or tight around the house, she makes cuts, and usually she makes those cuts on self-purchases. And if you look at some of those, the three of the Fab Five, particularly cosmetics and perfumes, jewelry and watches, and the third is women's dresses, tend to be incredibly strong indicators on where the economy is going and have proved to be great recessionary indicators. And when you combine those trends with what you read in the Bloomberg Orange Book, the comments, the anecdotes from the executives regarding, any of these discretionary spending indicators, you're starting to see that there's reason to believe that the economy is, in fact, headed for a notable decline or a notable moderation.
Now, we put these together, and there was a little bit of an uptick recently. But if you break down the numbers, it looks like the biggest fall in the last several months has been cosmetics and women's clothing. Casino gaming has also been dropping a bit, but those two in particular.
That's the answer. They, you know, those indicators are truly revealing on the trends of where the broader macro U.S. economy is going. Again, the U.S. economy is comprised of 70% of consumer spending, and most of that, those spending decisions are made by women. You know, I had the CEO of Lowe's Corp in my office in a previous lifetime, and he said, "Hey, what can you tell me about? Have you ever been to my store?" And he has a whole bunch of other analysts that were in the room at the time. "Have you ever been to a store?" I said, and all the men said no, but one woman in the office said, "Yes, I've been to your store." He says, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want." And I said, "Why do you want that? There's four men, one woman, and you're going to tell me that's what you want? Only 20% of the group going to your stores." He says, "No, I only care about the woman. If you're getting kitchen cabinets put in your house, who makes that decision? If you're getting carpeting put in the living room or you know, in one of the other in the bedrooms, who's making that decision?" And you know, makes you scratch your head whenever every man in the office sat there and said, "Well, definitely not me."
I'm there too.
You target, you watch women's spending habits. You watch that. It tells you a whole lot about consumerism, consumerology, and where the U.S. economy is going or tends to be going.
I think the only thing that I can actually have a say in my house is anything surrounding the barbecue.
And you know what? You probably don't even have that.
Yeah, I probably don't. It's probably she lets me think that I have that. Yeah,
like,
it's a good point.
Maybe she lets you think that.
Let them have the barbecue, sure. But anyway, let's segue over to China for a second. There was a New York Times article last week that talked about how, oh, can we really trust the China's economic numbers? Now, this is something that's been murmured around forever. And now the discussion is, well, you know, we used to look at electricity usage, and that now is a suspect because there could be some kind of shenanigans going on there. I'm from the frame of mind that, you know, I don't know necessarily how much of official numbers you can believe or not, but that doesn't matter when it comes to the bigger picture in terms of markets, because generally markets will believe them. It's kind of like what happens in Europe when they talk about things and they talk about Eurobonds and the markets go up, even though you know from a structural standpoint, from a contractual standpoint, they can't do it. So, you know, you have to look at something and have a little bit of faith on it. But is there something more to this whole China electricity story?
Well, I think, there's probably a whole doctoral dissertation lying in that story, to be honest with you. But I think that there's, I don't even think you need to look that deep into it. You know, you hear anecdotes of brownouts as they're trying to conserve some electricity and things like that. So you hear a ton of stories that are going on. But the bottom line is you're seeing this once voracious appetite for commodities has reversed its course, and some argue and claim that it's in a bear commodities on the whole are in a bear market. You see oil prices tanking,
down 20%. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, so I guess you can call that a bear market, depending on what your definition is and what commodity you're looking at. But the bottom line is you're seeing that the giant consumer of all of this is starting to drive these prices somewhat lower. How low do you go? You know, that's anybody's guess. You would leave that to an expert. But I think the bottom line is you're starting to see this behemoth that was really driving a lot of global demand is starting to soften. Again, not even looking at anything that comes from the Chinese Statistical Bureau. You don't have to do that to know that the China economy advancing at 8% or maybe even 6%, which is where they were during the Great Recession here in the U.S., is certainly experiencing some major weakness.
Yeah.
So with that said, you're seeing, which also leads to my point, where you can see on the 10-year, I think on the 10-year Treasury, you could very easily see a 50 basis point print. You have us teetering on recession, in my opinion, a much stronger recession than anyone has talked about. and you see Europe basically. I think a friend of mine, Nouriel Roubini, was on Bloomberg television this morning talking about most of Europe is in depression,
mm-hmm.
which I guess you can make that case too. We had a depression a couple of years ago, and I'm talking about 2008, 2009. The U.S. experienced a depression, but no one likes to use that word.
No, can't use that word.
They associate that with the Great Depression of the 30s, and that's just not fair. But we did have a depression. We're still on very thin ice. We're susceptible towards that. And now if you combine that with what's going on over in Europe, you combine that with what's going on, a China hard landing, much harder than anyone had initiated as well or initially believed as well. And then if you have the reverberations, the knock-on effects, and the whole macro picture where the other emerging market nations start to suffer, and now you start to see the implosion. And where do you go with your funds?
Yeah.
Everyone goes to the U.S. Treasury market. So we're already teetering at 162, I guess, on, mm-hmm. on the 10-year mm-hmm. note. We've toyed with sub 150. That's not a big deal. That was pretty much expected by certainly some of the people that I know. And now I think that to see 50 basis points on the 10-year wouldn't be such a bad thing.
You know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
I talked to someone last night about how we were all envious of Japan back in the 80s when they bought, you know, Rockefeller Center. Or we were pissed about it, but we were envious about the whole Japanese culture and how they make money. And we want to do everything except for the exercises in the morning that they do at companies, right? And in mm-hmm. a sense, I know this is kind of something that's been said before, but we've really have become, or we're getting to become, the kind of mirror image 20 years later of Japan. I mean, with the amount of debt outstanding, the fact that we have the yen is different. I mean, our dollar is going down and yen has been moving up. But it's amazing how we have actually become that situation where the potential for growth is just, it's only because of maybe stimulus measures and other kind of initiatives. And that's a whole different can of worms, talking about the fiscal versus the monetary stimulus that could be happening. And in every news item, you see this whole discussion about stimulus. There's nothing organic that seems to be going on. And it's a mm-hmm. it's a shame for our country. I mean, there's some tech and there's some other innovation, there's social media. That's kind of an organic thing going on. But, you know, and the only other thing I saw was when Japan is actually moving some of their car manufacturing here, and that's a cost factor issue. But I agree with you. I mean, look at their bond yields. They're in the toilet. They've been there forever.
Yeah, the story about that is, you know, we traditionally have in this country, and many countries, but just particularly us, we've had this, and you learn about it in every introductory economics course, of the monetary and fiscal policy mix. And unfortunately, I think monetary policy is impotent in the sense that, you know, the Fed controls one thing, which is interest rates, right? And so it intends to influence the two most interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy, which are housing and manufacturing. So we know pretty much housing is flat on its back. So the Fed, in essence, is trying to revive a dead patient. I think that's an impossible task. So you may get some increase in some sales and purchases of foreclosed homes and distressed properties, which we've seen a lot of, certainly in the last 2 years. So that's driving that. That you're not going to get any job creation out of that either. But you have seen a big increase in manufacturing output, a very sharp V-shaped recovery, and that's great as well. But unfortunately, for the employment situation, the employment effects of that, you don't have any. You have maybe negligible job increases on that. So for this major surge, that we've had in manufacturing output, industrial production, since the bottom of the recession, we haven't had any increase in manufacturing employment, and that's the problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So now, as far as are we turning Japanese? I think yes, in a sense. We're in a liquidity trap, as Paul Krugman would tell you. So I don't know why you don't. And we're following the same policies, certainly
right.
from the Federal Reserve,
right, exactly.
from the monetary side. So, are we turning Japanese? Well, if you wrap avocado, cucumber, and rice in nori with sesame seeds, it's a California roll.
Yep.
So I don't know why you could call it something else. So Right. Yes, that's what it is. We are turning Japanese from the monetary policy perspective. The real situation is how dire this really is that we have only we don't have any fiscal policy response. We have an incompetent. We have an incompetent Congress that just is reluctant to help us getting more restrictive on policy. And from what I understand, there will only be 11 days for them to meet, or they are scheduled to meet only 11 days after the election to figure out what they're going to do to get the economy going before we get to the fiscal cliff. And I don't think that there's anybody who does not know of the fiscal cliff, its warnings, and its possible impact.
Yeah, it's a pretty scary situation because if you think about it, if there was going to be some type of fiscal initiative, the only thing that really can happen is to postpone or to do away with the various things that are actually going to be coming to an end at the end of the year. In other words, it's not like we're starting with a fresh slate. We're starting with already problems way deep. Oh, and if they do move the Bush tax cuts and all the other things up or postpone that expiration, it's really nothing different, but it does cost a lot of money to do so.
That's right. That's what should have happened. That's what should have happened in the beginning. When we were promised boots to the ground, jobs before the Depression, when President-elect Obama went on the Sunday circuit speaking, yes, we're going to have shovel-ready jobs, boots to the ground. Now, I don't believe that the government should be dumping money into the directly into the hands and employing people. But we're in a depression, right? In 2008, we entered a depression. They should have put all of that tax money that they took from us, and they should have directly put it into the hands of the unemployed agents, which were construction workers, which were manufacturers, which were machinists. Those guys were unemployed. What do we need? We needed our dilapidated highways, bridges, tunnels, railways, ports, the electrical grid. We have airports that can't land the newest planes. So if we had this New Deal Works project in place, we could have employed all of those workers, very much like we did after the Great Depression. Right, my great grandfather was a sculptor in New York, and he sculpted Atlas in Rockefeller Center.
Really,
he received money from the government to do those projects. The government said, "Go out, build this." So when the Depression is over, you have a legacy. You have a legacy that says, "Wow, look what we did!" You know, we have all these people who are making money. They were working. There's a legacy of things that are, we have art. We have tunnels and airports and things like that. So we have all this infrastructure rebuilt. Now instead, and then you have, of course, a deal of optimism. People making incomes, mm-hmm. and people are happy and they party. Then what happens? Well, now we did not do that. What we did was the extended unemployment benefit insurance. So basically, we promoted people to sit on the couch, eat bonbons, and watch Oprah. And now, here it is, X amount of years later, I have plenty of friends who are still unemployed. Mm-hmm. And now there's no optimism. There's no confidence. There's no income, as I mentioned earlier in this webcast. And now we just have to sit here and figure out what we got to do. So yes, it's going to cost a lot of money, and they're going to have to redo that. Otherwise, and I don't think that there's too many Americans, if you sat here and said, "I'm going to take $700 billion from your tax money, and I can either give it to people to work, or I can give it to people and fix our dilapidated infrastructure, or I'm going to give it to people so that they can go out and they can sit on their couch and watch television." I think that most people are going to say, "Well, you're going to take my money anyway. You're going to spend my money anyway. At least promote jobs."
Yeah, one of the big problems is they went the wrong direction. I mean, they did try to do a few things with the cylinder, with the solar power and all that, and the alternative mm-hmm. energy and all, but a lot of the stuff was unproven. You know, versus if you're sculpting Atlas and or whatever you're doing, that is something that's going to be solid and staying there. It doesn't have to be proven. So that's kind of like, you know, work to work and truly Keynesian style. But when trying to bring up new technologies, which is noble and that's great, but the amount of money they put into it is unbelievable. I want to finish this one point with you and then let you go. One of the things we're writing about and something that we really kind of are digging into is the whole concept of the velocity of money, because this is where we see the biggest problem, because there is stimulus, there's money coming in, there's and that's from cheap money, if you will, then there's unemployment benefits, if you will, and there's a variety of things. So the question always has been, why is the money not really trickling down per se, you know, all that gigantic amounts of money? Part of it is because it had to fill some major holes before the dam broke. But the other thing is this whole concept of velocity of money that we think is that, you know, there is this block of money out there, but without the confidence of the future and the unknowns and all that, what happens is the velocity of movement of money, which is the precursor to growth in an economy, doesn't happen. Would you agree with that?
Well, here's why the velocity of money doesn't work, or at least doesn't work right now. I came from a monetarist institution before this, and so I adhered to it, but in this current environment, is it different? Milton Friedman will remind you that inflation occurs when too much money chases too few goods, right?
Right.
And, of course, we all know that the Fed has increased its balance sheet, so now there's tons of money floating around out there. The problem is there's not none of this money is getting into the goods market to chase the too few goods,
right.
That is, via loans. Okay, so the banks are holding it on their balance sheets so that people will have confidence to trade it and do their daily business. The issue is when that money starts getting out, that is when banks start making loans to smaller businesses, to commercial industrial loans. I'm talking about all banks, not just one size of the banks. When you start to see loan activity start to pick up, that's when the Fed is going to get worried about inflation. We don't have an inflationary threat. In fact, I argue we have a deflationary threat.
Yep.
Threat. The biggest, not only through, not commodities, because commodities are only about 20% of the U.S. economy. You have to watch wages, and that's the first thing I talked about. When wages are collapsing, as they are, people are making less money than they did in previous jobs, if they're fortunate enough to work full-time and not just part-time jobs, which is the predominant issue right now. When you don't have enough money, that's a deflationary environment. Okay,
yep.
It's the price of labor, right?
Right.
Your price of labor is collapsing. That's a deflationary environment. That's 68-69% of the U.S. economy, right there, is that inflation, and that's what the Fed's watching. And if you want to find out when the Fed starts ratcheting up interest rates, just watch the income numbers and that. So that's what I would worry about, the velocity of money. I wouldn't worry about that so much until I start lending money. But I would keep my eye certainly on all of the wages.
Right. No, I think we both agree that the problem is that there is no velocity in money. Is the point? I mean, that's the whole crux of all this. It's just not. It's just, you know, one pocket to the next. For the next, it's not getting out there, and it's not being put out there in the world. Anyway, I thank you for your time, Richard Yamarone. He is the economist over at Bloomberg. He writes for Bloomberg Brief. We'll of course put that information on the website. All around good guy. I encourage you to read his work. Great stuff. Thanks, Richard.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Right.
Good conversation with Richard Yamore, and that was kind of depressing in a way. I mean, going into recession, we were in a depression, all those kind of things that we don't want to hear about and kind of things that, in a way, kind of spook investors. And I don't blame you. I mean, it is a kind of a scary environment when you see that kind of thing really coming up. But what I want to do is I want to spend some time with Kevin Hoffman. We haven't brought him on for a while. And talk about how, you know, what to do in this kind of environment. Because one of the things that's really important to realize is that there are things that will work in the world of investing in almost any environment where if things aren't really good, maybe you want to be in bonds. I mean, Richard was talking about how 0.5% on the 10-year. Well, if that's the case, then bonds are going to work pretty well. At the same time, when you get into different cycles of the business cycle and the economic cycle, different things work. You know, you have the early cyclicals, the cyclicals, and you get into the consumer discretionary. But the bottom line is that there are opportunities, and one of the things that I think is really neat is that when there's a choppy market, when it kind of, you know, thrusts one way or the other, but it doesn't really move in a trend, what do you do? So I thought we would talk with Kevin a little bit because Kevin and I have been working on this trigger point research, and everything about the alerts process is kind of working on the whole idea that when there is an opportunity, how do you find it? How do you actually identify with it? And we had that great session, that workshop, the webinar that we had, which we'll talk about in a second, some new ones coming up, that really, I think, we got some great feedback on because people saw how, you know, traditional trend lines and traditional 50-day moving averages and maybe MACD and RSI and all that, you know, they're good, but kind of there's some new things that are available that really give you a much greater transparency into the markets of what happened when somebody was buying, where they were accumulating, where they're selling, where the drop-off points are. And if you can find those and identify with those, it helps you get a much greater position for entry so that you have a much greater level of confidence. Because when you enter something, don't forget, listen, if a stock goes up 30% and you got on the bottom, hey, you're great. But if stock went up 30% over time and you got in the last 5%, well, you may be in trouble because it could be some backtracking going on. So anyway, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Yeah, it's been a while, huh?
It has been a very long time.
Now, since we've last talked on the podcast, you have a piece of jewelry that you wear.
Oh, yes, yes. It's very uncomfortable.
It's tight, right?
It's very tight.
Very tight. It gets very tighter tight. Every day, doesn't it?
That's right. I take it off quite often.
Yeah, very nice. So Kevin got married to a beautiful woman. Her name is Allison, who is a star in the making herself.
That's right.
When it comes to the corporate world, she's a very bright woman, very beautiful. And so congratulations to you. And I was at the wedding. It was really a great time. So thanks for inviting me, by the way.
Oh, no, thank you.
Did you invite me just because you had to? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you're the boss. So. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I hear you. So, Kevin, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the markets and what's going on. And one of the things that we've talked about here is that, you know, traditional indicators are kind of a little bit not as reliable right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're just in a point in time right now where stocks are moving up, stocks are moving down, and it's really kind of difficult to try and find good opportunities and reliable opportunities as well. So that's a great thing about this trigger point research is, you know, we're looking at stocks that you may not even think about, stocks that don't even cross your screens, and also provide you with various different risk parameters and actionable and reliable alerts.
Yeah, so I want to kind of just get into some of the detail there because we talked about that last at that last webinar. That was kind of cool. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was great.
You know, and we talked about how
very popular, by the way.
Well, we were sold out, folks. You know, we only had room for 100 or so, and we were solid, so that was good. By the way, I'll just tell you right now, if you're thinking about doing the next one that's coming up, and if you want to, there's three more coming up in July, just go to triggerpointresearch.com/webinar, and you'll find the calendar there, and you can sign up, et cetera. And I know that from the last registration process, a lot of people are taking multiple workshops. They're all different, and because they're free, we get booked up pretty fast. I mean, that's the truth, right?
That's right. That's right.
So, but I want to kind of help you a little bit further in identifying what to look for, because right now, you know, there's always the importance of fundamentals. Fundamentals are really important, but at the same time, when you're looking for buying and selling decisions, I think a lot of times the technicals and appropriate technicals trump the fundamentals, because you can have a great stock. You're not going to know that the fundamentals are failing till sometime in the future when the company comes out with the report, et cetera. But yet the crowd, which is really what you see in charts.
Well, you also have to put it in perspective that we're at a point in time when at any moment's notice, a headline can cross and Europe is saved Europe is failing or the deficit falls through, or right. Who knows?
Yeah, or Europe is saved and failing at the same time.
Exactly.
Which seems to be the case.
So in the short run, it makes a lot of sense to really pay attention to these technical levels, because while fundamentals can be great for a long period of time, the stock may not move up in that in that period of time due to headlines or just due to circumstances that are unbeknownst to us.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's interesting, actually, when you use technicals for the final decision making, and this is something we talked about in the Disciplined Investor book and in the Winning Investor book, what happens is that there may be a stock that you have a preconceived notion about. You may say, you know what, I hate the coffee at Starbucks. There's no way I'm going to buy that stock. Or you may say, you know what, I'm really against some type of maybe smoking, and you don't want to buy the Altria, or you know, whatever it may be. But at the same time, you become clouded. Your judgment becomes very clouded, and you won't buy a name that you maybe could be making a profit on. because other people, and you know, see it that way, et cetera. So what happens is when you're looking at these kind of situations with very defined levels of technicals, and again, focusing on technicals here, what happens is that you kind of lose that preconception and you kind of throw it out and you say, okay, this is making the right price move on the right volume. This checks, this checks, this checks. Okay, I'm going to buy it and go long. Or on the other side is maybe you have a stock that you just absolutely love. And we'll just use Apple because everybody loves Apple, it seems. And you just don't want to sell it no matter what. But you know what? The fact of the matter is you're going to hold it till when if it goes down. So what happens here is that you get this level. You get these exact levels on stocks that are making moves or potentially making moves. So I want to go over some of the ones because we talked about it here. We wrote about it on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We've tweeted it. Some of these on Trigger Trading, at Trigger Trading over on Twitter. But there was some really substantial standouts, and I was pretty surprised, actually, at some of these numbers because, you know, some of these, again, you may not be thinking about the names that may be moving up and or moving down, for that matter. You know, we've talked about how we called the Green Mountain Coffee drop, and that was great. We picked up some Herbalife on the upside some time back. But some of the more recent ones, especially in this choppy market, have been doing pretty well.
Yeah, we've had some really great trades over the past 30 days even. And one of the great things about these alerts is that most of them are meant to act within 30 days or less. And over the course of the period, we've had several outstanding outstanding stock picks or alerts that have happened within 5 to 10 days where we've moved up, you know, 10 to 15% within that time period and hit our profit targets. And that's really what's important in this market is setting those profit targets and those stop levels, because you really want to skew the number of percentage of profit to the long side versus skewing the percentage to the downside, which is a big thing, because a lot of times you may not have more winners than losers, but you want those winners to really run and be big winners rather than having big losers. So that's why you need those stop levels to really kind of contain yourself to maybe a 5 or 10% loss, but really letting those winners run to a greater than 20% or even greater than 10%, and just taking those winners. And that's what we've done over the past 30 days, is we've really skewed to the, you know, greater than 10% and greater than 20% profits on some of these positions, and really limited the amount of downside that we've had on several of these. If we look at, for instance, some of these companies you may not have even heard of, Cheniere Energy, which is LNG. Some of you may have heard of it as well, but you know, we put out an alert on June 4th of just this year, and 2 days later, or I'm sorry, not 2 days, 11 days later, it was up 25%. So we're really looking for those ones that move, and they move quick. Another example is Westport Innovations. We had a great pick just on June 7th, and it shot up today just by another 10%, just because they signed a second deal with GM to start producing more natural gas engines for them. And that returned over 20 days, approximately 22%. So we're talking about some big movers here, some fast movers, and really limiting that downside.
Now, one of the things that's important, I think, to mention is a couple of things. First of all, these are not like arbitrary picks. These are algorithm generated by certain specific characteristics of the pattern of volume at time, volume at price, as well as short interest possibly for the longs or a downside opportunity for the shorts. And, you know, you mentioned the Westport. Now, that was closed last, I think it was last Wednesday we closed that. And what was interesting is that it hit our target. It went a little bit above that. It hit our target, but that's when we say, you know what, we're taking a piece off the table or all of it off the table. In this particular environment, you've noticed this flip-flop of 1 day up, 2 days up, 1 day down, or back and forth. And when you see those type of big moves, I think it's very, very important to, you know, take a piece off, take your profit. Nobody ever had a loss taking a profit, and then redeploy the assets when it's appropriate into the right place. Now, it may be that there's a secondary level that we're looking at, but right now, for example, on Westport, and both those things you mentioned were natural gas related, by the way, which is interesting. But when you look at this, we are. I think it's important, and what I'm trying to really get across to you here is that hope and expectation needs to be taken out of the equation right now. And what you need to be doing is much more of a written slash absolute discipline and a plan and a strategy that you stick with so that you don't get hurt. Because, listen, the economy is not doing great. That doesn't mean stocks can't do well, but the economy is not doing great. There's a lot of headline risk out there with all the things that are happening politically and geopolitically as well as economically. There's a lot of things that are really playing in here. So if you can find the opportunity, if you want to do some quote-unquote trading, shorter term, not just buy and hold, there are some things. We actually use a lot of these for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy portfolios because that's how we manage money. And just an aside, because this is a little bit of an infomercial, I'm just letting you know that you know, there is a 14-day free trial. If you haven't tried it yet, just go over to triggerpointresearch.com, and it's right on the front page. Just click and just try it. But what people have commented back to us, what they like about this and what's different about this is the fact that you get instantaneous emails when the alert hits with clearly defined profit targets, stop losses, charts of when the alert hit, as well as an ongoing chart to see how it progressed. And you also have the option of getting text messages so that you know right away that something is happening. And we'll text message, the system will text message you when you get an alert, or, for example, when maybe something is in fact hitting a target or breaking down in the wrong direction. So kind of a cool way of doing things, because this gives you, you know, access to unbiased, unemotional trading opportunities. But the main thing is that we have rules that we've tested out, like no holds longer than 30 days. You know, you take your position, and if it stops out, you stop it out. You don't hold on to it. If we say that this is the first tier of upside opportunity and possibly add on to that, well, you add on at that level if it's breaking through on higher volume. There's like a whole bunch of little things. And it's pretty easy once you get going with it. This is not associated with, you know, our investment management. This is a totally separate project that we did with a group that has created a major algorithm with us to give us a kind of, again, an inside look at what institutions are doing. So, the other thing is, Kevin, let's not go away with this and make it look like all peaches and cream. I mean, there was some losses in there, but you did some statistics on that, I think, somewhere. I know I saw it somewhere that where you showed that, you know, losses were contained, right? I mean, because of the
stock. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's really the whole point of the project here, is to contain those losses and let the winners grow. And, you know, we didn't have any losses that were greater than less than 20%. And we had four that were greater than 20% on the upside. So, and what we've really done is we've skewed it. The skew has been really good for the upside potential, and the skew to the downside has really been contained to between a losses of 5% and 10% at the very most.
Right. And I think if we average this, it's been 3 months, so it's about maybe 3 alerts per week. Maybe.
Yeah, we've had about 64 total alerts in the past 3 months.
Yeah.
So there's never any shortage of trades that we're doing.
Right. And what we do also is, if you go to the site, you can see a history of all that, and we also track the performance on that. Let's sound a segue over. Everybody knows what to do now. So you go over to triggerpointresearch.com. You subscribe for the 14-day free trial. If you like what happens, if you make some money and all that, then you just subscribe to either the breaking up, the breaking down, or the pro. And, you know, it's if you think about the pricing, it's $99 a month for the breaking up. And if you can't make $99 a month utilizing this, from what we've seen, we have a problem. If you follow the rules, you got to follow the rules and stay the course.
That's right.
So let's kind of segue for a second and talk a little bit about the bigger picture. You know, we talk about bonds. I mean, you spend a lot of time in our global allocations, and you look at a lot of the bond mutual funds, the institutional players, the ETFs. I think some of the discussion we've had in our meetings and our portfolio meetings is, you know, we're still just amazed how well bonds around the world have been doing. Around the world, I mean, not just here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's very impressive. And the reason is because rates keep going down. The Fed has no problem with stimulating the economy and continuing to lower those long-term rates. So what bond portfolios are doing is they're lengthening their duration. They're seeking out yield. People are, I guess, increasing their risk by buying corporate bonds, which is exactly what the Fed is wanting you to do. They want you to buy riskier assets. They don't want you to buy treasuries, unfortunately. Even though it's the safest place to be, they would rather you go out and put money in the stock market.
Yeah, they want to buy all the treasuries.
Right. No, they
want it all to themselves.
That's right. No, they really do. And they know that they know that's the only way to try and stimulate this market. And, you know, unfortunately, while they may be doing their best to stimulate the market, it's just not working. And the reasons for that are because although the money is there, nobody's utilizing it.
Right.
We really need to get that money utilized. And the reasons why the money's not being utilized, well, I mean, we could argue several different things, but I think a lot of it has to do with political barriers. We don't know what the future holds for us. We don't know if we're going to have a Republican in the next year, a Democrat. We don't know what the tax situation is. We don't know what our deficit's going to be. We don't know what our budget will be. I mean,
it just goes on and on.
There's too many things.
Yeah, and we talked about that. I talked about it with Richard a little while ago, the piece that we're writing on the velocity of money, and that really just ties right into it. And he said, it was interesting, he said that the velocity of money doesn't work right now. I said, why is
there
that?
There is none.
There is none. That's right, exactly what he said. So I was thinking, in other words, I was thinking at first he was saying that the concept doesn't work, right? You know, that the theory doesn't work. But the fact of the matter is, it's not that the theory doesn't work, it's the fact that there is no velocity of money. It's just kind of sitting there right now, not knowing what to do. It's not being deployed.
Right.
So,
and that's one of the things we'll be discussing in our quarterly is how it's not really possible for the Fed to increase the velocity of money. And we've compared that to some of the things that have gone on in Japan, where the BOJ has kept their interest rates extremely low and not been able to bring up that velocity of money. It really has to do with our fiscal policy.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, well, listen, we're going to end it there, and I want to make sure that everybody knows, of course, 14-day free trial, we got that. We're going to have some webinars. Actually, tell me the dates of the next series of the classes. We're going to do these breakout classes over on a GoToMeeting platform for you, and you can just be there and check out all the things we're doing. We'll show you some very advanced levels of the alerts and breaking up and breaking down, but we're also going to show you things on a new model that we haven't even talked about yet, which is our market trend model, the trend indicator, as well as the model for market timing. What we've done is we've developed something that's really neat. You know, a lot of people have watched when we talk about like things like the with Tom McClellan or Spearman or a few other things. Well, we put a lot of things together to come up when there is this overheating or an oversold condition, which are not names I really like to use. But when you see things in such a degree to the wrong side where there's a lot of potential for a quick move, but also when the trend changes where you should be either hopping on a position in terms of a long portfolio, again, there's a big picture now, or being short or being out. So anyway, yeah, what are the dates?
That's something that we're going to be discussing on July 12th. We're also going to review the alerts at that point in time. So those of you that missed the previous class can have an opportunity to jump on board and take a review of those various alerts. And then July 26th, we're going to do an in-depth discovery of the various algorithms with our joint venture, the TASS Professional Group. And then on August 9th, we'll be doing a review of all of those for those of you who have missed it. And we'll be going over some of the pre-earnings reports as well that we put out on a free basis so far. But yeah, it'd be something really good to talk about.
There's a whole bunch of summer. Hey, listen, with the summer kind of in a slow motion, trading kind of drops off a little bit and people are taking a little bit of vacation, what better time to, you know, kind of increase your education? Because we have to always learn when it comes to investing and making sure we stay on top of things, because this world of investing is ever-changing. I'm always reading new things, old things. You know, I go back to the 30s, 40s, and 50s and read some of the old classics of investing, you know, and kind of try to replace some of the words when they talk about watching the tape and talking about watching the screen.
Yeah, it's like reminiscences of a stock operator.
Right, exactly. Yeah, watching that stuff, reading that. And it's kind of good stuff. I mean,
go to the bucket shops.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. We're going to hang out in the bucket shops in the afternoon and watch the trades go by. Anyway, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. Again, congratulations on your wedding to Allison. And I wish you the best of luck. And I'll talk to you very shortly.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. All right, that's going to wrap it up. And like I said, I'm going to be out. You're going to miss me for a week. I don't think, if memory serves me correctly, I don't think we've missed a podcast in 2 years. So I hope you forgive me. And I hope that you do have the opportunity to register for one of those upcoming classes. They'll be fun. You'll learn something. And I'm going to take a few days of exploring Asia to not only learn a little bit more about those countries, but it's always a good idea, I think, to get out of the environment that you're in and look at different cultures and find out what's going on, not only from a just a social and historic level, but also from a business standpoint, because we learn a lot about what's happening with other economies, the world, as seen through their eyes. One of my favorite stories when I went to Vietnam, and we talked with the people there, and we talked about the war, the Vietnam War. Well, they don't call it the Vietnam War there. They call it the American War. And that's obviously kind of logical from their standpoint. But again, you get to see things from a different perspective. And that's what I enjoy the most. I'll report back to you and tell you all about what happened on my trip. And we'll see you in the next podcast coming up. Do me a favor. Go over to iTunes and leave a review. Write some things down. Just takes 5 minutes to check the leave a review box and not only rate it, but also put a few words down. I'd like to hear what you're thinking. And it's always good if you do enjoy the conversation to tell other people so that they can join in as well. And if you don't, well, okay, I want to know what's going on there too. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.